Günstig ohne App. Bei Aldi gibt es einen Preis für alle. Diese Woche der große Bauer Fruchtjoghurt. 250 Gramm für nur 39 Cent. Oder Gerolsteiner Mineralwasser. 1,5 Liter für nur 79 Cent zuzüglich Pfand. Entdecke weitere Angebote in deinem Aldi Nord. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
Hey there, darkness prevails here. If you're like me, you need way more scary stuff and folk horror in your life. I'm excited to say that you don't have to worry, because we have you covered. That's because Freaky Folklore is now on YouTube with exclusive folklore videos that are as educational as they are creepy. Want to know how to identify a skinwalker? Or what to do when a Wendigo decides to make you food? Or maybe you want to discover new folklore monsters you've never heard of, like the Wood Booger of Appalachia? Well, head on over to Freaky Folklore on YouTube right now. Just search for Freaky Folklore on YouTube. Subscribe and watch some creepy videos while you're there. You can also just go to freakyfolklore.com to go right there. Thank you. A man visiting some family for a couple of days finds himself in a cold and eerie loft. But he soon wakes up to find he is not alone up there. Something from outside has decided to join him. Welcome back to Unexplained Encounters. I'm your host, Darkness Prevails, here to tell you stories of the unknown from real people like you. Today's stories feature dogman encounters, disturbing shadows, and visages from the end of the world that you do not want to see. If you have a scary story of the unknown and you want to hear it on this show, send it to me at darkstories.org. Help us grow by finding Unexplained Encounters on your favorite podcast app and leaving us a follow. Or subscribe to Darkness Prevails on YouTube and give this episode a thumbs up. Thank you. Now, let's begin. I hate lofts. From Sir Loftalot. My apartment was being fumigated for bed bugs. The whole building had them thanks to the couple in 3B, who I won't specifically name, who had brought back infested furniture from a yard sale. 2 days, they said, we'd need to be out. Most people went to hotels, but my brother Garrett and his wife Lynn offered to let me crash at their place. Fair warning, Garrett said when he picked me up. You'll be in the loft. It's not exactly the Ritz either. He wasn't kidding. Their house was one of those split-level deals from the 70s. And the loft was this converted attic space above the garage. You got to it through a pull-down ladder in the hallway. It had been Garrett's home office before he started working from the kitchen table like everyone else. The space itself wasn't so bad. It was decent-sized with wood floors, and it even had built-in shelves along one wall. But it was cold as heck up there, even though it was just September. The insulation was garbage, and there was this massive circular window, maybe 4 feet across, that faced the backyard. One of those architectural features that looks cool but makes no practical sense. And the window doesn't lock, Lynn apologized, handing me blankets. Actually, it doesn't even latch either. Just lean something against it if the wind picks up. The window opened outward on hinges, and sure enough, when I pushed it, it swung open easily. Looking out, I could see their backyard. It was a big garden area that Lynn was always posting photos of on Instagram. There was this heavy wooden lattice covered in ivy that ran up the back wall of the house, ending just below the window. It looked sturdy enough to hold a person, though at the time I couldn't imagine why anyone would want to climb it. My nephews, 8-year-old Dustin and 6-year-old Cameron, thought it was hilarious that Uncle Pete was sleeping in the treehouse, as they called it. They helped me haul up my air mattress and bag, then Lynn shooed them off to get ready for bed. Their rooms were directly below the loft, on the second floor of the house. That first night, I set up my makeshift bed in the middle of the room, right under the sloped ceiling. I had my phone, a bottle of water, and a book. Once I was settled in, it was pretty cozy, actually, even though it was deathfully cold. I could hear the family moving around below me. There was running water and muffled TV sounds. Could even hear the kids arguing about something. Normal, happy house noise. At around midnight, I woke up needing to go pee. I had had too much coffee at dinner. The house was quiet now, everyone was probably in bed. I made my way down the ladder carefully, trying my best to avoid making it creak. I used the bathroom on the second floor and washed my hands. Then I headed back up. When I got back to the loft, my water bottle was on its side by the window. I distinctly remembered leaving it next to my pillow standing up. The window, as well, was open about 3 inches. I assumed I must have knocked the bottle over when I got up, didn't notice it. Maybe the temperature change had made the window swing open a little bit. Old houses do weird things, and pressure and all that. I closed it, then hung my backpack over the inner handles, which were, I guess, useless, hoping it would weigh it down, to keep it from opening on its own. Then I went back to sleep. At around 3 a.m., a scratching noise woke me up. Sounded like some sort of animals moving around in the backyard, rustling through Lynn's garden. Probably possums. Garrett had mentioned they'd been getting into the compost bin. I heard the sound move closer to the house, and I heard what sounded like claws on wood. Whatever it was had found the lattice. The climbing sound continued, slowly. Not the quick scurrying of a raccoon or possum. This one sounded heavy. The lattice creaked under some weight. I lay there staring at the dark circle of the window, waiting for some sort of masked face to appear and scare the living daylights out of me. But nothing showed up. The climbing sounds stopped right below the window. Then, after maybe 30 seconds, they began to descend again. Whoever it was, whatever it was, changed its mind. I heard it moving through the garden after that, followed by nothing. Truthfully, I didn't sleep much after that. The next morning at breakfast, I mentioned hearing animals in the yard. Lynn and Garrett exchanged a quick look. "Yeah, we get all kinds of wildlife here," Lynn said, focusing on her eggs. "Usually possums or deer." "Big possums," Garrett added. "Some of them are huge." Dustin piped up. "Tell them about the—" "Finish your cereal," Lynn cut him off. "You're going to be late for school otherwise." I spent the day out of the house, killing time at coffee shops and the library, not looking forward to another night in that loft, even though there was just one more night. When I got back after dinner, Garrett had put a space heater up there. "Figured he might be kinda cold," he said. "Last night in the loft, then back to your own bed tomorrow, huh?" I nodded my head and thanked him. That night I was exhausted. I had barely slept the night before, and the space heater made the loft feel really comfortable. I decided to set up my air mattress in the corner, away from that window. If something wanted to climb up and look in, it wouldn't see me right away. I hung my backpack over the handles again, and around 11, books still in my hand, I dozed off. The noise that woke me up wasn't scratching this time. It was breathing. Deep breaths that weren't coming from below or outside. It was coming from in the loft. I opened my eyes without moving my head at all. From my corner, I could see most of the room in the dim light from the street lamp outside. The circular loft window was wide open. Something was crawling across the floor. It moved on all fours, unlike any animal I'd ever known. The limbs were very long, bending too soon or too late, I couldn't tell. And whatever it was covered all over in dark fur. The head was massive, too big for the thin neck, and elongated in a way that made my stomach all acidic and nauseous. It was sniffing quietly as it moved, head low to the ground, following some trail across the floor that I couldn't see. When it reached my water bottle, still where I'd left it by my pillow from the first night, it picked it up. It picked it up like a man, with a hand, or what looked like a hand. I could clearly see that what it was using to grab that bottle had opposable thumbs, but those thumbs were twice as long as mine, at least, each ending in a thick, dark nail. The creature examined the bottle, turning it over, then set it down carefully. Then it continued to move toward the ladder opening. It moved to the edge, and peered down into the hallway below. The way its neck extended, stretching to look down, made me want to close my eyes and pretend I was only dreaming. But I couldn't really look away. It was studying the hallway, head tilting back and forth. Then it started to lower itself down, backwards, those long fingers gripping the edge of the opening. The kids' rooms were down there, Dustin and Cameron sleeping, with this thing about to crawl down into their hallway. I tried to scream, but nothing came out at first, nothing more than a wheeze of terror. The thing's head then snapped toward me, and I saw its face clearly for the first time. It was like a wolf's face, stretched and flattened, and its eyes reflected light like a dog's, and they were focused directly on me. I found my voice then, and screamed, really screamed, as loud as I could. That thing moved faster than anything that size should be able to. It rose up right away on two legs, slamming its head into the sloped ceiling with a crack that sounded like bone or wood. It made a sound, not quite a growl, not quite a screech, but something between the two that I could feel deep in my chest. Then it scrambled for the window, those awkwardly long limbs flailing and knocking over everything in its path. It went through the window head first, and I heard the lattice groaning and snapping under its weight as it went down. By the time I got to the window to look out, the backyard was empty. Garrett was up the ladder 30 seconds later with a baseball bat. Lynn was right behind him. I could hear the kids crying downstairs, frightened due to my scream. I told Garrett and Lynn everything, my words tumbling out in a rush while I was still shaking. They didn't laugh at me, though, and they told me it was no dream. Lynn got teary-eyed as she told me. "We've seen it. 3 times now. In the backyard. It's always after dark. We never thought it would climb the lattice." "We didn't think it would come inside," Garrett added, staring at the open window. They'd been telling themselves it was someone's escaped exotic pet. Maybe a sick bear. Anything that made sense. They'd even called animal control once. But of course, nothing showed up during the day. Garrett looked at me sternly and said, "Don't you let them kids think it was anything else but a possum. You hear me? Uncle Pete saw a big possum, and it scared him, and they'll buy that. And they'll be sleeping just fine. I'll be taking down that lattice." He looked at Lynn then, probably assuming she'd be disappointed at the idea. But she was nodding rapidly. "And," she looked at me, "we're going to get bars on that window as soon as possible. Bars on all the windows if we have to." She looked back at Garrett. "Well, they did more than just bars. They moved next week. They told everyone it was for the kids, for better schools or something like that. That wasn't entirely untrue. It was for the kids, because before they left, Garrett told me they had found scratch marks on the kids' window screens." The Return of the Shadow in the Dark, from Gearhead 993. I recently wrote into the show earlier this year, sharing a story that actually got featured, regarding a paranormal incident that I experienced when I was very young. The episode in question was the March 5th episode, titled Dragged into the Woods, on Unexplained Encounters. About 30-ish minutes in, you'll find Shadows in the Dark, a story that will now live on in infamy. You see, I've always been the type to believe that things always happen for a reason, never by chance. Since that day I wrote in, I've been looking over my shoulder a little more than usual. It seems everywhere I turn, I catch a glimpse of something. But only for a split second, then it's gone again. Sometimes a whisper, other times more physical, like a breathing down your neck kind of thing that sends shivers down your spine. Or like I'm being followed by someone, or in this case, something. As of writing this, it's been about 8-ish weeks since the incident took place. It was a Friday. My fiance and I had gotten off work. We dropped the kiddo off with the grandparents, and we were off to DoorDash for the afternoon. It had been a pretty satisfying night, making a little over $100 in just the couple of hours we were out. Overall, pretty solid. No whispers, no breathing down the neck. I'd almost forgotten about it. Almost. We got home around 9:45, just before the rain hit. The weatherman called for isolated storms throughout the evening. Imagine that. Perfect night for paranormal activity, right? I mean, you couldn't script a Hollywood movie better than this. At about 10:38, I got up to go to the restroom. South Park was playing on the TV. If memory serves, it was the episode where Mackie loses it over the deuces in the boy's urinal. As I walked to the bathroom, the lights began to flicker off and on. I quickly realized I had left my phone on the armrest of the couch, so I turned back to grab it for a light in case the power went out before I could get back. I made my way down the hallway just past my daughter's bedroom when there was a flash of lightning outside the house, knocking out the lights, followed by a loud crack of thunder that shook the entire home. A moment later, the generator kicked on, restoring the power back to normal. And then I heard my fiancé scream, so I ran back to make sure she was okay. That's when I saw it. There, standing in our front doorway, was the shadow. The same shadow man I'd seen years ago as a kid. He was wearing a dark fedora like before, and even had the cane as well, down to the very same piercing red eyes. Only this time, my fiancé saw it too. Now, I need to stop here and point out that up until this point, somewhere inside me I've always felt like the paranormal only affects those that the anomalies tie themselves to. But in this moment, I couldn't have been more wrong about anything in my life. Everything inside me told me to tell my fiancé to run, but I just stood there, frozen in place like a deer in headlights. I was shocked by the sight of what stood before me. My past had finally caught up with me, and now I had a decision to make. Fight or flight? What's it going to be? After what felt like an eternity, I got up the courage to speak. "What do you want? Why have you come back?" I paused, waiting for a response. But it stood there staring at me with burning red eyes, staring into my soul. After a brief pause, I spoke again, demanding to know what it wanted. This time, the shadow raised its cane and pointed it in my direction, as if to answer, "You." My fiancé, in a panic, jumped up and tried to run to safety. But the shadow lifted its cane once again, and suddenly all the doors in the house closed with one mighty bang. At this moment, I knew I needed some kind of weapon and happened to remember I kept one of those bug assault pump-action rifles in the kitchen. I glanced over, and it was within reach on the counter to my right. I made a mad dash and grabbed it, gave it a quick pump. The shadow lunged in my direction, moving faster than my eyes could follow. It reached out to grab my throat, and I squeezed the trigger. Bam, square in the torso. There was this shrieking sound, and then it vanished. I looked around, waiting for the entity to reappear, but it was quiet. I glanced over, and my fiancé was hiding underneath her vanity in the next room, over in the den. "You all right?" I asked. "Do I look all right?" she yelled. "What the heck even was that?" I paused and said, "It's a long story. I've been dealing with shadows on and off my whole life. I think tonight's the only time someone else has seen it." She gave me this look and said, "This is crazy. I've never been through anything like this before." She then put her face in her hands and began to cry. I held her as tight as I could and gave her as much comfort as I could. Suddenly, a million thoughts raced into my mind. Was I going to lose her over a curse? What does this entity even want with me? A few days after the incident, I consulted with my psychiatrist, who referred me to a parapsychologist who specializes in paranormal investigation, who seems to think that I may in fact be the subject of a possible possession attempt. Since then, I've consulted with a number of religious and spiritual advisors, who have performed a cleanse on my home and placed some protective objects around the home for safety. I've since taken the religious route in fighting this entity, whoever or whatever it may be. For now, there has not been another incident with the shadow. Have we seen the last of this sinister spook? Time will tell. And one thing I know for certain, I could go the rest of my life without having to see it again. I hope it wasn't her. From Kakey Loney. My name is Kay, and I want to share a story that happened in 2013, which I vividly remember. I'm not sure if this will make it into the podcast, but if it does, I hope anyone listening believes this story, because it did happen to me. For starters, I'll give you a layout of the town I was born in, where everyone knew each other, and all the houses were really close together. There was a long stretch of road that led up the street and down the street. Back then, my town had neither mobile phones nor vehicles. It was a very rural town, where all the kids would play outside and gather together to play tag and other things. The older people told us many tales. Tales like El Cadejo, El Jinete Sin Cabeza, the Headless Horseman, La Carreta Chiona, the Creaking Cart, and many others. But one that mainly stuck with me was La Ciguanaba, which is an urban legend from El Salvador. Many people know her, and many of us fear her. There have been sightings of her around Central America. La Ciguanaba was a beautiful woman who married a soldier and had a child with this soldier. The soldier was found in bed by the wife with another woman. The wife was furious and lashed out at her husband, killing both him and his mistress. Later on, she abandoned her child in a banana plantation where his lifeless body was found. After they found the victim's bodies, they found hers, and she became a restless spirit who haunts the streets of El Salvador, hunting drunk men and cheaters. Well, let me tell you my story now. One afternoon, I went to visit my aunt who lived down the street from our home, around six or seven houses down the street. She and I were close, almost like sisters. She had left home due to my grandmother's strict behavior and abuse. I lived with my grandma due to my parents being in the U.S. My aunt's house was a very beautiful home surrounded by trees. Her home was built like an L shape, where in the middle she had this big tree, which I believe was called a ceiba or ceiba tree. You can look it up. It's quite big. I was always somewhat afraid of that tree, due to how big it was. That afternoon, I left early, around 1, and my grandma had told me to return before sundown, due to all the violence that was happening in El Salvador at the time. Well, of course, I had lost track of time. By the time I realized, the sun had already set behind the hills. I knew my grandma was going to be extremely upset if I didn't get home. I was on my way to say goodbye to my aunt when I heard my name being called. Now, I've got a very unique name, and not everyone's familiar with it, nor do folks usually know how to pronounce it. So I was caught off guard thinking it was my aunt. I ignored it and went looking for my aunt. Once I found her, I asked her if she had called out my name. She gave me an odd look and told me she in fact had not. I explained to her how I had lost track of time and that I should head home. She told me to spend the night, as it was pretty dark by then. I told her I couldn't because of my grandma. My aunt reassured me it should be fine. She would explain to my grandma the next day. But I insisted, so she finally gave in and she told me to wait for her. She was going to go look for a flashlight so I could walk back home with it. Once she had gone back inside, I went to walk out to the front of the house, looking at the tree, thinking about how much trouble I was in, when I heard my name being called once more. Of course, I thought it was my aunt again. I replied, "Yes?" But there was no reply back. Then again, I heard my name being called for the second time. I looked around, but nobody was around until I looked at the tree. There she was, a woman peeping her head out behind the tree, smiling with her long black hair covering her pale skin. I stared at her, frozen in terror. I then took off running to look for my aunt. I bumped into her husband. He asked me what was going on, what was wrong. I explained to him how I'd seen someone behind the big tree. He reassured me it was nothing, that I had just imagined it. I told him I didn't imagine it, that I had seen an actual woman of some sort behind the tree. He then grabbed his flashlight and told me he was going to take a look. I followed him, but I stayed within close reach of the door, just in case. Once he got near the tree, he said there was no one there, that I had possibly just imagined it out of fear of walking back home in the dark alone. Maybe that was the case, but I so clearly remember the woman's creepy smile and her long black hair. After that encounter, my aunt and her husband decided to walk me back home. Not long after, though, when I visited their home again, that tree had been cut down. My aunt said it was because it was too dangerous to have such a big tree near the house due to storms. But I don't fully believe that. At this point, I'm sure they both saw something. The Creature by the Fence. From Athletic Hunter 934. To this day, I don't know what I saw, but whatever it was, it has been burned into my mind. I was 18 years old when this happened. It was the opening day of rifle season in Wisconsin. It had snowed the day before, so when I got to my blind, I found it collapsed due to the snow. I was pretty annoyed to find my blind like this, but there was no choice. I would have to fix it and prop it back up again. However, something felt off. As I was fixing my blind, it felt like I was being watched. I thought it was nothing and I shook it off. After propping my blind back up, I heard footsteps behind me. I froze and everything went quiet. I slowly turned around and saw two bucks standing there looking at me. I was creeped out, but also confused, because this had never happened to me. They were just standing there, not moving an inch, and I couldn't even see them breathing. It was cold enough at the time to see your breath. As I looked at them, I slowly slid my rifle off my shoulder. But then all the sound came back, and the two bucks just walked away. After that, I knew the rest of the day would be odd. As the day went on, I still had that feeling of being watched. That feeling was coming from the way I walked in. It was around 3 in the afternoon when I heard a coyote call, but even that sounded wrong. It was distorted, like someone or something trying to do their own coyote call from memory, but failed miserably. As the sun was going down past the trees, I grabbed my rifle and backpack, then started my way up to my car. The route I take has me crossing a few fences on the property I hunt on. But as I was coming up on the last fence, that feeling of being watched came back. I immediately stopped in my tracks and looked around to see if I could see what was watching me. And then I saw it. Some kind of person or humanoid thing hunched on the fence post, looking at me. Its arms were pretty long and skinny, and it looked malnourished. It had short, patchy hair on its body, and its skin was light gray. As I stared at it more, I saw that its eyes were a deep black, almost like little voids. It had fairly pointy ears. I couldn't see a mouth or any signs of a mouth. All I could do was stand there and watch the thing, just like it was watching me. I slowly took a few steps towards it. As I took my second step, it quickly perched up. I stopped right where I was and made the foolish mistake of calling out, "Hello?" Then I saw its head tilt to the side, like a curious dog. The creature then hopped down from the fence post and stood straight up. It stood at around 6 feet tall, and its hands were almost claw-like, with long, pointy nails. Then it did something that made my blood run cold. It spoke to me, like it was mimicking me when I had said, "Hello," but distorted in much the same way as the coyote call from earlier. I tried pulling my rifle up, but it slipped out of my shaking hands and fell to the ground. After it hit the ground, I looked up to where the creature was. To my horror, it was gone. When I picked my rifle up, I quickly snapped back to reality and bolted up the hill, crossing the fence where the creature was. Then finally, I made it back to the car. Without any hesitation, I sped out of there and raced back to town. My uncle and brother told me they would be at a bar in town after they got finished in the woods. So I went there. When I walked inside, I sat next to my brother and uncle. They asked if I had seen a ghost due to how white my face was. I lied and just told them I was cold and I needed to warm up. I didn't tell them about the creature I saw. And to this day, whenever I'm out hunting, I'm kind of freaked out by the idea of running into it again. Blackjack Drive, from Angela 5007. In 1997, we built a new home construction. Our home was 3 blocks from a place called Massard Prairie Creek Battlefields in Fort Smith, Arkansas. Within 2 weeks of moving in, I began to see an apparition of a soldier dressed in gray. I saw him every day, standing between my kitchen and living room for about 2 years. He never moved. He never spoke. Finally, one day, a friend of mine named Meredith and I decided to do a Ouija board. She tried to communicate with it, or him. From that day forward, I never saw him again. But what happened next was terrifying and haunted me for years until we finally sold the house last June. Immediately, I started to have horrific and demonic night terrors. This went on for the next 25 years that I lived in that house. At first, I started to dream about witches. Witches that would cast spells on me and torture me. They would get inside my body and cause me physical harm. Over the next several years, I had 9 surgeries for 9 different health reasons. At one point, I had a stalker who broke into my house and attacked me. He broke my neck and caused me a lot of other physical harm that I don't wish to discuss further. Then I had a throat surgery, a stomach surgery, a gallbladder surgery, 3 liver surgeries, and a lump in my breast. All of this occurred immediately after we played the Ouija board, and all these things were things that in my dreams the witches had done to me. After that, and I don't know why, we tried the Ouija board again to make it go away. Only things just took a darker turn. At this point, I started to have severe demonic night terrors. They became so horrible. They drove me to the point of a self-harm attempt, which was almost successful. I was in the hospital in the ICU for several weeks after my attempt, during which I was hallucinating the entire time of devils and demons. When I came home, things did not get any better. I immediately started to see demons in my house. I believe this was a direct result of messing around with the Ouija board, with forces we knew nothing about. I was awake one day, and I don't know if you want to call it a daydream or hallucination, or if it was my reality. I was sitting in my bed and I looked down. My wrists were tied down to the bed. I looked over and I saw my cat being sucked into the baseboards, being killed. I looked out the window, and all I saw was hell on earth. The entire world was on fire, and there were mounds of dirt as big as mountains. These mountains of dirt had white doors on them and had animals and babies nailed to them. At the time, I had 4 boys of my own, and they were all nailed to the doors, along with 2 of my dogs. I watched in horror as construction equipment with buckets in the front went forward and chopped their bodies in half. To this day, I am terrorized by this vision. It all seemed so real at the time. I became plagued with sleep paralysis and sightings of demons and what I call the old hag. My husband thought I was insane. He had me committed a number of times. It wasn't until we finally sold the house and moved away that everything stopped. Last year, we sold the house and moved to another state. Since leaving, the strange and disturbing activity has come to an end. Saying Goodbye, from Putrid Decay. I'm going to start by saying I know my actions were dumb, but I'm a spooky gal, and I would probably do it again. This happened a few years ago, when my husband and I were staying with his 96-year-old great-grandmother in Appalachia. His family has a 300-acre cattle farm, and we needed somewhere to stay while saving for a house. And the great-grandmother, Miss Mary, needed someone to make sure she didn't fall or have an accident. As I said, I'm a spooky gal, and as you can imagine, there isn't much to do in the middle of nowhere. So I started testing my Appalachian knowledge by whistling at night. The first night, nothing happened. But in the morning, one of our chickens had died. I didn't really connect those things, but then every morning for 3 days, we'd wake up to a dead chicken. No obvious cause of death, no sickness. It wasn't abnormally hot or cold outside. Then I tried to whistle during the daytime, thinking maybe I'd see something if I tried during the day. As soon as noise left my mouth, the branch of a big old oak tree out front broke with a loud crack, and a bug flew into my face. That's not to say it flew into me by accident. It flew at me repeatedly, smacking my face until I stopped whistling. It was almost as if even the insects knew I was being dumb. I stopped whistling after that. I wasn't exactly scared, but I trusted that what I was doing could be putting us all at risk. Months passed with no incident, but a few days before we moved out, I was listening to Nightfall by Kavinsky. My husband was working nights and Miss Mary was in the hospital. Thankfully, nothing serious. Just getting fluids and combating a cold. Although maybe that was serious for a 96-year-old. The song starts and some of the lyrics sounded too loud to me. I want to drive you through the night, down the hills. Suddenly, my body started to feel as if I was underwater. I'm gonna tell you something you don't want to hear. I don't know how, but I knew whatever heard my whistle before was here now. I'm gonna show you where it's dark, but have no fear. I felt numb, not cold or scared or excited, but numb. I then went outside. Immediately, I was greeted by a rabbit standing just off the porch. Right away, I was greeted by a rabbit standing just off the porch, staring directly at me. I don't know how long we watched each other, but eventually the rabbit took a few hops towards the back of the house, where the woods are, and where the chicken coop is. Then it looked back at me, as if asking me to follow it. So I did. You've never seen darkness quite like Appalachian darkness. It's so dense, you feel it in all of your senses. Or at least, I did. As I followed the rabbit closer and closer to the chicken coop, unable to make out anything in the absence of light, every hair on my body began to stand up. My heart started to pound, and I finally felt afraid. Something was waiting for me. I slowly turned around, trying to appear more calm than I was, and I walked back to the front of the house. Just before I stepped out of the darkness, I looked back and I said out loud, "We're moving in a couple of days. If you follow me, I'll talk with you then." I know I'm the dumb white chick that dies in horror movies that everyone screams at, but it felt like they wanted to talk. So I went inside and shut the door. My entire body got hot, like the worst hot flash you can imagine. I was sweating and shaking. I never saw anything in Appalachia, but I'm pretty sure it saw me. I haven't had any weird experiences since then, and Miss Mary hasn't either. I don't know why it didn't kill me. Maybe it did just want to talk. But something exists in those mountains. Something you should be afraid of. The Pig Below the Window. From Leia. This story is quite short, but it scarred me for life, so bear with me. We'll call my sister T for the sake of her privacy. I was around 10 or 12 years old. I am unsure of the exact age. I recall the night being a bit blurry. I was in my sister's room, and we were hanging out as we usually did every few nights. Now, we didn't have a set bedtime back then, so I was prepared to stay awake all night. My time in her room was easygoing, as it always was. Of course, we'd have the occasional argument, but other than that, I'd look forward to my visits with her. Just like any other night, I expected this one to be the same as all the other visits. T was sitting in her chair doing her nightly routine. It wasn't much more than just taking off her makeup and such. The usual girl stuff. While she was doing that, I was standing up sort of near her chair on my phone. Nothing much occurred for those few hours we were hanging out. Our parents were still awake, as they usually stayed up a little late. It wasn't until T got up to head to the bathroom. I was still standing, captivated by something on my phone, so I didn't really notice her absence. A couple of minutes went by, and I heard faint oinking of all things. Mind you, we do live in a town where livestock is not allowed within city limits. But as a young kid, I wasn't aware of the law, and I was curious about the sound I was hearing outside. T's room had a big window with curtains. I approached the window and pulled the curtains over my head. It was night, and her light was on, so I cupped my hands and pressed my forehead against the window to get the best view of our backyard. I saw nothing until my eyes darted around to the ground, just below the window. From what I could see, it appeared to be a small pig. It was pink, and I heard oinking. From the moment I saw it, it felt like I was immediately put into a trance. The world around me suddenly didn't exist. My only focus was this pig on the ground, with an occasional oink leaving its mouth. It only lasted a few minutes, with me staring at it, but it felt like ages. Now, I've heard other stories saying they were put into a trance like that, and had the urge to leave the safety of their home to see what was there. And I now know what that feeling is like. My eyes never left this pig. All the while, my body was urging me to go outside, to walk out into the backyard, and grab this baby pig. The moment I decided that I was going to leave the room and head outside, it was like whatever that thing was sensed my soon-to-be arrival. And in an instant, whatever that thing was darted under our house in under a nanosecond. It moved so unnaturally fast, my body barely had time to process it. The only reason I was brought back to my senses was the squeal it let out as it ran. Now, this was no regular pig squeal. It was as if something was making an attempt to sound like one, but was unsure of how an actual pig squeal should sound. When I heard that unnatural scream, I threw myself away from that window, and I immediately broke down in tears. T came rushing into her room, asking what was wrong, what had happened. I could barely conjure words. Around 5 minutes later, I told her what happened. And then, together, we told our parents. I'm not sure if they entirely believed us, but my dad went outside with a bat to be sure. But to no avail, as he didn't find anything. Since that night, I never dared to look out any windows when it was nighttime, as I'm too afraid to encounter what I saw that unfaithful night. What do you think this pig-looking thing was? Why I Believe in the Dog Man, from Rovis 339. Every kid in my hometown had a climbing tree. Mine was a massive oak behind the Polk Farm, maybe a 10-minute bike ride from our subdivision. The trunk split into three main sections about 6 feet up, creating this perfect platform where 4 or 5 kids could sit comfortably. We'd spend entire summer days up there. Me, my best friend Corey, his little brother Jamie, and usually 1 or 2 kids from the neighborhood. This was back in 2004, when parents didn't track every move you made, and a bunch of 11-year-old kids could disappear into the woods for 8 hours without anyone calling the cops. As long as we were home by dinner, nobody asked questions. The Polks didn't mind us being on their property either, as long as we didn't mess with the cattle or leave trash around. The tree sat at the edge of about 40 acres of mixed forest and pasture. From up in the branches, you could see the fence line where the cows grazed, the creek that cut through the property, and deeper into the woods where older kids said there was an abandoned hunting cabin. We had carved our initials into the bark, and we hung a rope swing from one of the lower branches. We attempted a clubhouse, basically just a makeshift platform between two limbs that we called our lookout post. The first time I saw it was in late June. Corey and I were alone that day. Jamie had strep throat, and the other kids were at some church day camp. We'd been up in the tree since that morning, reading comic books and eating the sandwiches my mom had packed. It was hot, maybe 90 degrees, and even in the shade of the leaves, we were sweating. Corey was trying to hit a fence post with acorns when he stopped mid-throw and grabbed my arm hard enough to hurt. "Look," he whispered, pointing toward the creek. There was something moving through the tall grass near the water. At first, I thought it was one of the Polk's dogs. They had these two German shepherds that sometimes roamed around. But it wasn't, upon closer inspection. This thing would take a few steps on what must have been four legs, then rise up on two, and move around that way, before dropping back down. You'd think it was a bear after seeing that, right? But these movements were more fluid than a bear. Like it was equally comfortable and not at all awkward between two or four legs. When it came out of the grass onto the muddy creek bank, I got my first real look at it. The body was covered in dark brown fur, matted and filthy with mud or something worse. But it wasn't uniformly covered. There were patches where pale skin showed through, especially around what I guess you'd call its chest and stomach. The head was elongated like a dog's, but the snout was shorter than it should be, compressed somehow. And when it turned in our direction, I could see its eyes were forward-facing. Predator eyes, yellow-brown and very smart-looking. The thing that really got me were its front legs. When it was on all fours, they bent like human arms, not like a dog's legs. I could see things that looked more like fingers in the mud there, leaving prints that weren't quite hands, but definitely weren't paws. It was eating something, too. We watched it tear into what looked to be a rabbit, maybe a possum. It was holding the carcass up to its mouth with those not-quite-hands. The sounds it made were wet and crushing, bones breaking and meat tearing. Every few seconds it would stop and look around, scanning the area while it chewed. Corey and I didn't move, didn't even breathe loud. We sat in that tree for probably 20 minutes watching this thing eat, both of us knowing without discussing it that climbing down was no option. When it finished, it did something that still makes my skin crawl. It cleaned itself like a person would, used its tongue on those hand things, then rubbed its face. Grooming, not messy licking like dogs do. Then it stood fully upright, probably 6.5 feet tall, and walked back into the grass. Not a loping gait or bounding. It walked with a slightly hunched posture, but definitely bipedal. We stayed in the tree another hour before finally getting the courage to climb down. Once we did, we biked home faster than we'd ever ridden before. We didn't talk about it, not that day, not for weeks later. We kept going back to the tree, but never alone, and never past 4 in the afternoon. The second time was in August, right before school started back up. There were 5 of us that day. Me, Corey, Jamie, and 2 kids from the next street over. They were Tommy and his sister Angie. We'd been up in the tree all afternoon playing some elaborate game, where we were survivors in a zombie apocalypse, and the tree was our home base. Kid stuff. Fun kid stuff. At one point, Jamie had to go pee, so he climbed down and went to the designated spot we used. This thick cluster of bushes about 30 feet from the tree. We had a whole system, you see. You announced where you were going, did your business quick, and you came right back. Nobody went into the actual woods alone. He'd been gone maybe 2 minutes when we heard him scream. Not a jokey or playful scream or even a hurt scream. This was pure terror. We scrambled down so fast, Tommy fell the last 5 feet and knocked the wind from himself. Jamie came running out of the bushes, his face white, pointing back at the woods and trying to talk, but only managing these hiccuping sobs.
"It's there, it's there, it's there," he kept saying.
Corey grabbed his brother, trying to calm him down, while the rest of us stared at the woods. I don't know what made me look up instead of into the bushes. Maybe some primitive instinct, maybe just dumb luck. It was in a pine tree, about 40 feet away, maybe 15 feet off the ground. It was sitting there on a thick branch, watching. In the daylight, I could see more details I'd missed before. Its fur wasn't uniform in color. Darker on the back and limbs, and lighter on the belly, with those strange bald patches I mentioned, around the joints where the skin was thick and gray. The face was, I don't know how to describe it. Like someone had tried to push a human skull into the shape of a dog's head, but stopped halfway through. The mouth went too far back, showing too many teeth even when closed. But it was the way it sat that was truly wrong. It wasn't perched like an animal. It was sitting like a person would sit on a bench, legs hanging or dangling down, one hand thing gripping the branch, while the other hung loose at its side. Casual, comfortable. It watched us watching it. No aggression, no threat display. Just observation. Like it was memorizing us. Angie started to cry. Tommy threw up, and it tilted its head at the sound, interested but not excited, the way you might look at something mildly amusing on the TV.
"Back up," Corey said quietly. "Everyone back up slowly."
We did, moving as a group toward our bikes. The thing in the tree didn't move except to turn its head, tracking our movement. When we reached the bikes, I made the mistake of looking back one more time. I'll never forget that. I swear to you, this is what I saw. It was smiling. Doing something at least that looked like smiling. The corners of its mouth pulled back, showing more teeth. But there was no aggression to it. It was mimicry. It had seen us smiling up in our tree and looked to be trying it out on us. We didn't go back to the climbing tree after that. We made excuses when other kids asked us why. We started to hang out at the park in town instead, where there were people and lights and nowhere for something to sit and watch. My family moved to Ohio that winter for my dad's job. Corey and I lost touch after a few emails. Years later, I found him on Facebook, and I even asked him if he remembered that summer. He said, how could he forget? But beyond that, he didn't want to talk about it. He said that Jamie has nightmares even still sometimes. I looked up the area recently on Google Earth. The Polk Farm is apparently gone, probably sold, had been developed into more subdivisions it looked like. The woods got cleared for a shopping center. Our climbing tree is probably someone else's backyard now, or maybe it just got cut down entirely. My own kids love climbing trees. I let them, of course, but I pick the trees carefully. Ones with good visibility, nowhere for anything else to perch nearby. And they come inside well before dusk, no exceptions. They don't need to know why their dad always checks the higher branches first. Believe you me, if I told them why, none of us would be getting any sleep for a while. Shadow on the Classroom, from Rory Aragon. For context, both my family and the families of my friends have had experiences with spirits or unexplained phenomena. It was a typical Saturday afternoon, and I was hanging out with my usual friend group, Cameron and Logan. Notably, Cameron's dad is a frequent ghost hunter, often venturing out weekly with paranormal investigation gear. Logan, intrigued by this, had always wanted to try ghost hunting for himself. Near Cameron's house is an abandoned school with a chilling reputation. According to the local stories, a child was murdered there by a homeless man. The tragedy allegedly led to the school's permanent closure. Drawn by curiosity and maybe a bit of recklessness, we decided to explore the school ourselves at midnight using Cameron's dad's gear. None of us had ever gone ghost hunting before, but it had always been something we talked about. As midnight approached, we grabbed the equipment and headed to the school before we could talk ourselves out of it. From the moment we stepped onto the school grounds, something didn't feel right. Cameron had brought a Ouija board, which he pulled out from the gear bag and placed on a desk inside room 31, a detail that might prove important later. While the board sat undisturbed, we spread out the rest of the equipment across nearby rooms. A spirit box in room 32, dowsing rods in room 33, and EMF detectors and rope sensors in room 30. We intentionally kept everything close together, in case we needed to leave quickly. We started in room 32 with the spirit box, asking basic questions and listening closely. At one point, I caught a glimpse of a shadow from the corner of my eye. Assuming it may have been my imagination, I brushed it off. It was late after all, and this wasn't the first time I thought I saw something. Feeling a bit hungry, I told my friends I was going to grab a snack from the backpack we left in room 31. They stayed behind, still focused on the spirit box. As I walked down the hall, I saw something that made my blood run cold. A distinct shadow of a man standing at the school's entrance. Thinking it might have been a cop or maybe a security guard, I rushed back to my friends to tell them. Cameron and I went to check, but no one was there. Still unnerved, I returned to room 31 to grab a bag of chips. That's when I saw these three photographs of students on the whiteboard, each marked with crude, angry X's. The pictures had not been there earlier. As I tried to make sense of it, I noticed the Ouija board was out of its box. None of us had taken it out yet. Panicking, I ran back to my friends, trying not to scream. I told them what I saw, but they dismissed it, joking that I was just being crazy or goofy. Honestly, I was tired and started to believe that myself. We resumed the spirit box session, and for a while nothing happened. But then, we heard a voice, deep and raspy and unmistakably real. It had said one word.
Run.
We wrote it down in our notebooks and tried to ask follow-up questions, but we couldn't get any further responses. We then moved on to check the EMF detectors in room 30. The moment we entered, the detectors spiked uncontrollably. Freaked out, we turned everything off and began to pack up. As we gathered the last of our gear, we returned to room 31 to retrieve the backpack and the Ouija board. Then Logan suggested we try using it first, just once before we left. Cameron and I hesitated but eventually agreed. When we entered the room, we froze. The Ouija board was out of its box again, and the disturbing student photos were still on the whiteboard. Only now did my friends fully realize something was wrong. We quickly began packing everything up, and as we were doing so, I felt this icy chill going down my spine. It made the hairs on the back of my neck stand up. I turned around. A tall, shadowy figure of a man stood behind us. His form was dark and blurred at the edges, almost like static. I stared at it for a moment. Then, in the blink of an eye, it vanished. When I looked over at my friends, they saw it too, apparently. That night changed something in all of us. It's been a while since, and we still go ghost hunting. But we haven't gone back to that school. Not yet, anyway. Stories about werewolves and dogmen creeping up on you when you're sleeping have to be some of the scariest stories out there. At least, to me. Like, if that happened to me, I'm just exposing my neck and saying, go on then, get it over with. Good night. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Unexplained Encounters. I've been your host, Darkness Prevails. Send me your scary stories of the unknown darkstories.org so I can feature them in future episodes. And leave us a review and follow on Spotify and Apple Podcasts to help us grow. For those adults out there that enjoy irreverent and silly comedy, you can find my explicit podcast at Night Watchers Podcast on YouTube, or search for Night Watchers on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, or your favorite podcast app. Till next time, everyone, stay safe out there and stay creepy, because this world is a strange one.